Hey, welcome to On My Walk, the reading podcast that helps you capture those aha moments from reading and apply them to your life and leadership. And today on my walk, I had one of those aha moments, but it really wasn't something that I saw for the first time. It was like something I saw for the 10th or the 20th or with the 100th time. And here it is. It's when it comes to leadership, looks can be deceiving. Now, more about that in just a moment, but first, I want to remind you that I'm reading Founding Brothers, Joseph Ellis Pulitzer Prize-winning book that looks at the lives of 8 individuals who shaped America. And earlier today, I read chapter 3 entitled The Dinner. And who would have thought that a dinner conversation would play a significant role in the capital of the United States, being Washington, D.C., as opposed to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or New York City? But it did. And what is called the Compromise of 1790 stands, according to Ellis and others, as a pivotal moment in our nation's history. And in short, it was a compromise that settled differences between Alexander Hamilton and James Madison about debt in America and how our new republic should address that issue of debt. Ellis writes this: Jefferson offered to host a private dinner party where the main players could meet alone to see if the intractable political obstacles might melt away under the more benign influences of wine and gentlemanly conversation. Now, I hope to take time and address the Compromise of 1790 a little bit more tomorrow, because I think it really does warrant some focused attention. But for our purposes today, I want you to think with me a little bit about an often repeated idiom, and here it is. Appearances can be deceiving. Now, if there's one person with whom that rings true, it is James Madison. And to appreciate the idiom and the lessons from it for us, we need to understand the absolute towering presence of James Madison. Now, as I'm looking through Ellis's book, Founding Brothers, and this chapter in particular, I'm seeing 5 giant points that Ellis makes about Madison. Here they are. The first one's this: Madison was a movement mobilizer. Now, here's what I mean by that. Ellis points out that Madison helped mobilize the movement for the Constitutional Convention. Now, you think about how significant that is and how much influence someone would have in order to be able to gather such a variety of constituencies and bring them together to talk through this issue of the Constitution. Second thing, he had the honorary title Father of the Constitution. And Ellis writes, his arguments for a fortified national government became the centerpiece around which all the compromises and revisions for the eventual document congealed. He played such a significant role. The third piece about Madison that makes him tower above other people is the Federalist Papers. Now, he's a key author, along with Alexander Hamilton, and a little bit of contribution from John Jay, and together they wrote what is considered to be an American classic. The fourth piece is the Bill of Rights. So Madison drafted and helped move the Bill of Rights through the first Congress. A long time ago, I read a book by Richard Lubunsky entitled James Madison and the Struggle for the Bill of Rights. So if you're looking for a particular title to just dive in deep just on the Bill of Rights, check out Lubunsky's work. It's a good one. Number 5, and the thing that stands out about Madison and makes him tower above everyone, is he was the big knife. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, Madison's ability to handle all the wheeling and dealing in those political tumultuous times earned him the unofficial title Big Knife, because he had this incredible ability to cut deals with people to make things happen and move the political process along. Now, in light of all this, Ellis notes, he said several, and I'm quoting here, several historians said that by 1790, Madison had made the most creative contribution to political science in all of America. You think about that. That's a big statement. Second thing that Ellis points out, kind of just in a summation, is that Madison was, after Washington and Benjamin Franklin, generally regarded as the most influential political leader in the new nation. Now, that's something else. And yet, for all his towering intellect and influence, Madison was, in essence, a little man. He was little Jimmy Madison. The guy only stood 5 feet 6 inches tall. Listen to what Ellis writes.
He did not look the part. At 5 feet 6 and less than 140 pounds, little Jimmy Madison had the frail and discernibly fragile appearance of a career librarian or schoolmaster, forever lingering on the edge of some fatal ailment, overmatched by the daily demands of ordinary life. When he left his father's modest-sized plantation at Montpelier in Virginia to attend Princeton in 1769, Aaron Burr was a classmate, the youthful Madison had confessed to intimations of imminent mortality, somewhat morbidly predicting his early death. As it turned out, he survived longer than all the leaders of the revolutionary generation, observing near the end, "Having outlived so many of my contemporaries, I ought not to forget that I may be thought to have outlived myself." Not only did he look like the epitome of insignificance, diminutive, colorless, sickly, he was also paralyzingly shy, the kind of guest at a party who instinctively searched out the corners of the room.
Now, Ellis continues, he was practically invisible and wholly unthreatening. Now, I want to encourage you to read Founding Brothers because Ellis helps us to see so much. And although it's not the primary purpose of why he writes this chapter, this particular piece he brings out about James Madison is so important for those of us who lead, that Madison had the ability to harness who he was and understood who he was and operated within who he was, and that made him a more effective leader. He either rose above who he was, or probably better, he just learned how to make who he was serve the purposes he had as a leader. And I step back from all of this, and I'm learning two lessons, perhaps relearning them. One, every leader is a limited edition of one. So be yourself. Maximize who you are. Don't try to be someone you're not when it comes to leadership. The second, never underestimate a potential leader. And I think all of us who have a responsibility for raising up other leaders have to guard against falling into the very bad habit of putting on the type A glasses. In other words, we're looking through the lenses of the type A personality. We want to see who's the next Jack Welch, who's the next towering George Washington among us. And I think that's a mistake. Douglas Hyde, a long time ago, wrote a great volume entitled Dedication and Leadership, and he makes this same point. Sometimes it's the least likely candidate, at least from the outward appearance, that makes the biggest impact. So when it comes to leadership, looks can be deceiving. Well, that's my thought on my walk with Joseph Ellis and Founding Brothers. Now, what you do with it, that's for you to work out on your walk through life.